I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things. Have you ever encountered the phenomenon of an unexpectedly bald man?
Unexpectedly
bald. I feel like this might have been a plot device in Curb Your Enthusiasm, but it happened to me yesterday and it really caught me out for reasons I can't properly explain. This guy came over to sort out a couple of things in our garden.
Right.
And lovely chap.
Sweet guy.
And he came over initially to do an estimate, and he was wearing, I think, a beanie hat, and then he'd got a hoodie on over the beanie hat, kind of. So he was like maximum head coverage.
Right.
And he had a very big beard. And my mind had just sort of mentally filled in that because he had a big beard, he also had a lot of hair. And his beard was very black, you know, so really sort of dark black beard, impressive beard. So I thought he must have a full head of hair. And he came back to sort the stuff out, and he got his hoodie up. And then when he was doing the work, getting rid of all these rogue plants that we've got coming out the back of our garden, he flipped his hoodie down, bald as a coot. And it really threw me off, because I like, to the point where I almost, when he came to talk to me, I was like, oh, I thought you had hair. No, sorry, don't. Yeah, just didn't see it coming. Did not expect him to be a slaphead.
Since you're a bit pissed off about it, I don't know. But it's a bit like radio DJs not being as you would insist that they look like. I remember getting a little bit disappointed and confused that Terry Wogan didn't look the way I expected him to look, and I expected him to have a massive beard. And this is when,
really?
I was a kid at school. Yeah, I remember. And still, I mean, it's less so now because radio DJs have webcams, and part of the world of media is that you've got to be visual and audio and all the other medias. But in the olden days, if you were a radio DJ, you were squirreled away in a cupboard. You didn't really get seen much. Did you?
Now, Wogan, see, that's funny because I feel like Wogan was on the telly quite a lot, you know, Blankety Blank and his own chat show and all that sort of stuff in the 80s. So
I was playing Lego.
Oh, right. Fair enough.
I think I was playing Lego.
Johnny, look up at the TV. It's that guy. No, I'm busy with Lego. The one that really threw me as a kid was Steve Wright, because I remember distinctly seeing a picture of him in the Radio Times. And almost refusing to believe that this sort of slightly rat-faced man with a moustache was the guy off the radio who did all the chitty-chat stuff with his posse. I can't remember what I thought he looked like, but he just didn't look like Steve Wright, actually.
Well, that's because you form this picture, because you listen to these people for hours of your life, mostly in the background. I mean, we both have the Radio 1 here and there, don't we?
You more than me.
The radio, I know the radio distracts me, but I refuse to turn it off. I'm quite a stubborn idiot.
Is it because it's company?
Yeah, I think it's because otherwise I'll turn to the dark side of Car and Classic or something like that.
you can do that with the radio on as well. I mean,
yeah,
God
you can
knows.
Do both, and then you literally get nothing done. But
I was on Car and Classic last night because every so often I do a little Zoom get together with three mates where we rather just sort of, you know, zoom up together and have a drink and talk shite. We put some structure on it by picking cars from
Classic roulette.
Well,
roulette.
You can find the car anywhere you like, but basically, and our mate Chris, who came up with this, sets the topics, and we haven't done one for a while. And so he was like, "Should we get on Zoom again and do one of these since we're sort of technically in lockdown?" And he sets a couple of categories that your car picks have got to fall into, which
That's
are quite broad.
Great.
But last night he did one of the categories, and he does it in advance. He lets us know so he can have a good little rummage around the internet first. One of the categories was just a Japanese car, because it felt like we always end up seemingly talking about khaki old Lotuses and things. And he was like, let's go. Right, you've all got to pick a Japanese car. And so I had a little furtle around Car and Classic. I ended up going with a Toyota Century, predictably enough.
Of course I did. And a V12 at that, I'm sure.
Of course, yeah. Not that many around at the moment. Often there's sort of two or three, and I think there's on Car and Classic, certainly, there's only one at the moment. There's I'm not going to lie,
it's probably not the most 2020 friendly car.
Oh, I disagree. Now more than ever, we need the Toyota Century.
Utter reliability.
Yeah, and how dependable and relaxing it must be.
And actually, that's a really good point.
What do we need in these difficult times more than dependability and relaxation? I mean, I think 2020 is the year of the V12 powered Toyota Century. It's just no one else has realised yet.
No, 2020 should be the year of Japanese oversized, unnecessarily oversized engined Luxo barges. Maybe that's what we should all do as a sort of part of a joint therapy. We've all admitted in our own ways, and I certainly have, that it's been a bit of a battle this year. And maybe a morale boost would be, I just go out and pull the trigger on that LS400 that I've never pulled the trigger on. And
yeah.
I fill it full of honourable domestic market Japanese trinkets. I think it would be bloody brilliant.
The Century that's on Car and Classic is has got the cloth seats, which I would insist on, rather than the leather. But it doesn't have the doily anti-macassars. There's one on eBay that does, and oh my goodness, it's a JDM treat.
If it doesn't have
no macassar,
the word anti-macassar.
Anti-macassar.
It's not mamacassar. No, mamacassar is the dead lady from All the Leaves Are Brown and the Skies Are Grey. It's not her. It's anti-macassar who's still alive.
She lives in San Francisco. She's got a lot of long skirts and beads. She's really nice. Really nice.
Oh yeah. She is. She's fantastic. She's very, very in tune with the earth. Sweet woman.
Sweet.
Do you know what? You know, you were just talking about people who don't look like you expect them to look like because you've formulated a picture of them in your head. I think it used to be like that. And perhaps, used to be like that with maybe convicted criminals and killers. Because the Yorkshire Rippers died. The infamous serial killer of women. He's died, hasn't he, of coronavirus in prison.
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm bringing such a jolly subject up on the podcast is because he was convicted because of his car crimes. The car, I think, the ID of the car led to his conviction.
Is that right?
I'm sure you'll remember. Yeah, I'm absolutely certain of it. In fact, to the point where I'm going to bring it up because I think this is a fascinating car-related crime.
Now, hang on. Was it
It was
some
he'd
kind
stolen
of
the
Renault?
Plates.
Was it like a Renault 16 or something?
No.
Wasn't it?
Oh. I'm sure it was SD1 and Skoda related.
Crikey.
I think what he'd done is he'd stolen the reg plate off another car to put on his car.
Oh, okay.
And the police did a random stop check when he had... Did he have a woman in the car?
I don't know. Do you know what?
It's really, really good.
That he was a lorry driver.
I feel a bit bad now because I've kind of told you that he got convicted because of his registration, and now I don't know the full story. So I'm being a bit of an idiot.
Now, hang on. This was in the early 80s, wasn't it? So
81, he was convicted.
If the police stopped you to run a check on your plate, they would have to
radio back
station.
To base.
And then
yes.
What would they do? Go through some Rolodex or something? Because I can't imagine everything was computerised, even at the police station back then.
I will have to... bollocks. But tell you what, in about 40 minutes, I'll have the answer for you. How about that?
Why, are you using Rolodex as well? I've got these Google Rolodex through. They're very, very big, but my God, they've got a lot of information on them.
Now, I've watched... I am sure it involves a Rover SD1, and I'm sure it involves a Skoda. And the reason why it involves the Skoda is because, from memory, he'd stolen a plate from a Skoda, stuck it on his Rover, got pulled over in the Rover complete with murder weapons in the back... And they only pulled him over, not because they thought he was a killer, but because they were like, well, hang on a minute, I don't think that that's that plate from that car. And it turns out it wasn't. And I think that is how he got pulled in.
Okay. We've got the makings of a whole separate podcast here. You know, crime
haven't
podcasts
just,
are very...
Oh, killer's cars.
Very popular, aren't they? But, well, I was just thinking more like Johnny Smith's vague crime solving.
Oh, do you want vague crimes?
Vague crimes.
I can do vague crimes. I can do vague crimes.
Vague recollections of how crimes were solved.
Well, the reason why I brought that up on the basis of what you said is because not actually because of the Yorkshire Ripper, was because I remember when I first saw a picture of Harold Shipman... another murderer. Mm-hmm. I just failed to believe that he'd killed all those people. I was like, just look at him. He just looks like a very trusting, slightly sorry looking old Father Christmas.
Well,
from
there you
a
go.
Shopping centre. But that's textbook serial
killer.
Yeah,
that's the secret of it, isn't it? I'm sort of also seeing. I see. I thought that Sutcliffe had a Renault 16 because I thought Shipman definitely had a Spass.
Which was notorious. Was it red?
Maybe. But I'm pretty sure
he was seen with it a lot.
Once upon a time during scripting for Top Gear when I worked there, we were able to convincingly construct a case that all serial killers enjoyed a practical Renault. And we definitely found a few examples. I'm pretty sure of it.
Is that something that Renault could use in PR literature at any point?
I think they should probably have a meeting about it before they commit fully to the the car of choice for serial killers angle, PR-wise. But
you can hear my old-fashioned keyboard clicking away because I'm determined to... I'm sure the Yorkshire Ripper drove a Rover SD1, but I'm...
Yeah,
the problem is you know what? Google today is just not right. I'm going to do a Trump. Everything I'm looking at Google today isn't right. It's not right. It's
why
not
don't you
right.
Try another search engine such as DuckDuckGo or Bing.
I've got Ecosia on the go now.
Ecosia, who is that?
You got to say it with the West Country accent. Ecosia. Ecosia is really good, and they're not paying me to say this, but every time you use Ecosia to search for something, they promise to plant a tree.
No.
They do. And I've...
So you could just sit there all day searching for things, and they would have to plant like 200 trees.
It's absolutely true. It's their tagline is search the web to plant trees, and I switch to... Excuse me, I've got indigestion.
This is going well.
I know, I'm broken.
Serial killers and burps.
We search the web. No, sorry, you search the web, we plant the trees. Ecosia is like no other search engine. I'm doing this wrong. Ecosia is like any other search engine with one major difference. We use our profits to plant trees. It's really true. I'm not just making this up. I've made most of the other stuff up today on the podcast, but I'm not actually making this up.
Okay.
I promise you, man. I wasn't going to talk about the Yorkshire Ripper and their car connections, and I wasn't going to talk about anything. I'd written two things down today. One of them, which made me chuckle, was... just came on the radio before phoning you up, was the You're the One That I Want song... Olivia Newton-John, Travolta from Greece.
Yes.
And you know, we've talked about this before, but musicals are something that jar with me. I'm not sure I can accept them. However, Greece, I got brought up with Greece, and I've watched it way more than any other film, and I'm not going to talk about that now. But what I am going to talk about is I think Greece can quickly decide a true car enthusiast from a non-car enthusiast.
Go on.
Do you know how?
No.
Well, because Grease Lightning was shit. Grease.
No.
Grease Lightning was so crap. It was a proper kind of what I would call a TV car. It was just whacked together, or a movie car. It was thrown together to look impressive for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But anyone who's into cars would look at it and go, it's so badly thought out and clearly not very good. Just looks like a Morris Minor with like CB Super Oscars self-tapped onto the front wings and really bad decals. Whereas the baddie, Craterface, with his chop-top lead sled, far superior car, looked good. I mean, we need a design guru like Frank Stephenson or... Ian Callum or someone like that, or Gord Murray, to look to really analyse the aesthetics here. But I do think, actually, when it comes down to it, Grease Lightning was toss, and the baddie's car, which doesn't get nearly enough airtime on the film, is a far superior vehicle.
I mean, I'm...
So if you're a non-car enthusiast,
yeah,
you would probably say, oh well, I loved Grease Lightning. Well, no, Grease Lightning was crap. Grease Lightning was just total crap.
Are you getting
the picture that I haven't had much sleep this week?
I often get that picture, and I'll be honest, sometimes I worry about you and the amount of sleep that you get, because I don't think it's enough. But I do agree with you. For some reason, it just set me thinking about other movie cars that are shit, and all I can think of is the Eleanor Mustang, because that's shit.
Don't get me started.
It makes me cross
Shelby.
How shit that car is just to look at. I can't understand why anybody would want to replicate that just sort of piss poor look that car has. it actually enrages me.
I'm going to probably get shouted at for this, but I've got to stress to people that it's not a real fucking Shelby. It's not a real Shelby. No Shelby Mustang ever looked like that, because bless him,
gashed.
The late Carroll Shelby would never put badly formed plastic on the front of a car that needs chrome, because they wouldn't, because it doesn't work.
Mm.
All right. Also, I watched that film at the cinema.
Yeah.
I remember making a point of watching it, and it was really strange, because on the one hand, Nicolas Cage was just a little bit too strange and overacting. And on the other hand, you had the most beautiful woman in the world trying to balance the carbs on a Ferrari. So emotionally, it was a bit of a roller coaster
Real
for
roller
me watching
coaster,
that
yeah.
film. Ooh, I mean, really hard.
Look, she's messing with the needles. Oh,
she's,
God, there's that
she's
absolutely gash Mustang again.
Yes, it's and Cage stroking the wheel and talking to it. Enough already. I want to see the most beautiful woman in the world balancing the carbs again, please.
I mean, talking about things that slightly enrage you with their shitness, the acting of Nicolas Cage is one of those things for me as well. He drives me mad. I mean, he's no good. It's just, he looks deranged even when the script doesn't call for it. I just can't, I can't be doing with it.
I love that. The fact that any circumstances, he shouldn't get any acting jobs. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I suppose I am. I don't. If I had to list my top 1,000 film actors, he wouldn't even be close. He's just terrible. I don't get
it. What was his best work, though? Cage, because he's done some.
Well, I'm hesitating to really be completely critical of Cage, because I sort of it's nagging me that there are actually some films he's done that are quite enjoyable, and I just can't remember what they are.
Didn't he do Snake? Was it Snake Eyes?
Oh, I don't know.
Snake Eyes.
Films.
We're going to have. There's a connection here between the aforementioned Grease and The Boy Cage, and that is a film which is so bad. I love it. I will always enjoy watching it, and it's Face Off.
Oh,
can you remember?
Yes.
It's John Woo.
I can remember that film, and it's hilariously cack, isn't it? I think I went to see it at the cinema.
Oh, it's so ridiculous. It's peak. I think it's probably peak Travolta with glass fibre face syndrome.
Yes.
Because you keep looking at him going, is he a real John Travolta? Or is he another person with John Travolta's face on? Because nobody knows what John Travolta's face really looks like anymore.
Have they used an animatronic John Travolta for this movie? It doesn't look real.
No, I know. And also, supremely angry in it, like supremely angry.
Yeah,
because that was post Pulp Fiction comeback, wasn't it?
Yes,
where suddenly he was just doing everything,
and he sort of pissed it away a little bit. Like he came back with some credibility because of the Tarantino effect, and then it sort of frittered it away by doing really toss films. But yeah. Is John Travolta one of those people who's got quite a big face, so he seems fatter than he is?
Have you ever tried to scan your own face on a photocopier by moving it from left to right as the scanning bar goes along?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
I mean, who hasn't?
And then you know what the result is like.
Yeah, it's not what you expect, is it?
Your face is 1.5 times wider than normal. I've done that before. Mate, you must close your eyes. You must close your eyes.
Oh, yes.
That's John Travolta's normal face. It's very, very strange. But I've got so much respect for the Travolta, purely based upon Saturday Night Fever, because I still think it's a really cool film. And I've probably mentioned this in a previous Smith & Sniff video when I was sat next to you eating nuts.
Mm.
But, yeah, there's something very cool about Saturday Night Fever and the fact that his mate in it, who's the only one with a car, drives around in a truly beaten-up 64 Impala four-door, which is still one of the coolest cars out there. And
Saturday Night Fever is, for me, one of those films.
Film.
Yeah, well, describe that as a sandwich film. And Psycho would be another one, where all you remember is the yummy, juicy bit in the middle, the filling, be it jam or a nice, I don't know, bit of ham and mustard or something. The tasty bit, you remember that. You don't remember the really thick bread around it, which is the what makes up the bulk of the film. So Saturday Night Fever, all
That's
I can remember
true.
Are the famous club scenes. And yeah, actually, you know, there's loads of bits that aren't in clubs and there's fighting and all sorts, isn't there? And
oh, there's the C word.
Is there?
Travolta uses the C word.
Wow.
And I think he calls a woman it.
Bloody hell.
And that's a shocker because you don't hear the C word in films now, really.
No.
It's one of those things, a bit like a fire alarm that you have to smash a piece of glass in order to activate.
Mm.
It's one of those things that I believe should be behind a piece of glass and you only use it when you really have to. A bit like one of those hammers on a train when you know you've got to smash the glass to get the hammer to smash your way out of a train if things are going really badly.
I worked in an office where the C word. I agree with you because it should be kept special for emergency use only.
Yeah, I was going to say special bad, not special good.
But I used to work in an office where it was probably used a little bit too much. And then a colleague and I went to a meeting with some people from another office, another company who didn't work with us. And without thinking, I used it to accuse my colleague that I was with of being a C word because we were disagreeing about stuff. And it got not heated. It was like, this is the way we would normally talk to each other. But of course, to people listening in, they didn't realise. And I went, oh, come on, you're just being a C word about this.
Oh.
And there was an audible in the room. And I suddenly went, oh, no, we're in front of strangers. And I've just dropped the C-bomb. There's no walking back from it.
What did happen? I've got to know.
Well, we just sort of carried on. But do you know when you kind of, like, if you were a snail, you would have gone back into your shell and stayed there for a while until everyone left the room. It was like that. I don't think I spoke much after that because I realised that I fucked up. The worst thing was, as well, it was in front of the people who ran the Bewley Motor Museum. And museum
seriously?
People are a gentle kind, yes. I know.
And you dropped that?
Yeah, I threw a sea grenade into the room without thinking.
Oh, you. I hope you were wearing a really tall turtleneck sweater that you could duck your head into, a bit like, you know, like a tortoise puts his head away. I think you could have done that and then just done the ostrich thing of like, honestly, I'm not in the room anymore. Nobody's watching me. I've got nothing to contribute to anymore in the room. I tell you what. One thing you have contributed towards, you've genuinely made me lol this week with your Instagram post showing a picture of Nick Knowles in a Aston Martin Signet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't stop chuckling about that.
It's a bit of a gift, picture.
It's fantastic.
And I very much enjoyed your observation about it being left-hand drive because I hadn't really picked up on that. But, yeah, I don't know what's going on with Instagram. You're a big Instagram fan, aren't you? You use it a lot.
Well, I've mentioned this before, but I was not on Instagram until I did filmed a show in the States for the BBC America, and they kind of forced me into getting an Instagram account because they said nobody in America cares about Twitter. Because I went, I've got a fair amount of following on Twitter. They went, nobody cares about Twitter in America. You've got to be on Instagram. And I went, oh, well, I've never really looked at it. This was a while ago now. So I had to get one and then try and work out why I should have one and then just built it up from there. And, of course, being self-employed, I suppose it has its benefits of unashamed self-promotion or just, I kind of enjoy it now, although I'm being told by experts that I don't do it right.
Oh.
Those experts, including my wife.
Because every time I look at Instagram, because I wasn't really, I was on Instagram, and every so often I'd just put up a picture of a car that I'd seen in the street. And then I was having a chat with someone that we know about Instagram, and they were talking about how they were trying to build up an Instagram account for a project they're working on, and how they were admitting that they weren't doing it right because they weren't posting regularly enough. And I started thinking, I wonder if I start posting more regularly, if I can plump up my follower count a little bit for no real reason. And then I sort of, so I just tried it for a week, but I alighted on, rather than posting pictures of cars, because you've got to go out and take pictures of cars. I was like, I don't have that.
Of course
many.
You have.
I'm not going out as much except walking the dog, and I don't see that many interesting cars to keep.
Well, you see,
going.
You see abandoned Skoda Subaru Tribecas in
that
the
is true.
Of the road,
yeah,
which
that
is quite funny.
Yeah, it's gone now, by the way.
Has it?
Yeah. Good. So I started to, I just started looking around on the internet for shit pictures of celebrities with cars, and then making up stories to go with them, and thought I'll try that as a little shtick on Instagram. And people seem to quite like it, but I don't really know where I'm going with it, except that they're quite fun to do. And hence the latest one was Nick Knowles. Weirdly, it has, like, my follower count's kind of doubled in a month or so. So it has kind of been,
because people are probably appreciating the fact that it's a bit strange.
It is a bit strange.
Also, Nick Knowles, television's DIY SOS man in the UK, actually a really good show. Actually, really tugs on your heartstrings sometimes, but. I have now got this image of Nick Knowles turning up to all of these intense DIY house rebuild shows in a Signet with one of those, with a tow bar, with one of those exceptionally small trailers that you get from from places like Halfords.
Well, like the one you've got that you haul your easy chairs around.
Like my late break show, very small, borderline pointless trailer, but actually I've found a point for them.
Have you had it branded up, that trailer? I can't remember.
No, I might do that.
I think you should.
It's something I might do maybe on the run-up to Christmas. Maybe I will restore, resto-mod the trailer and have some awful sign writing in maybe a really bad font the side. You know, like a local business that hasn't had any graphic design time.
Go with Cooper. Do you know Cooper? The typeface, which is on, I think, it's on Microsoft Word and stuff. It's a really sort of 70s sign writing typeface.
Love a bit of Cooper.
Do that, yeah. I like a bit of Cooper as well. It hits the spot, doesn't it? If you want to go, oh, I want this to look like the side of a comma van in 1974, Cooper.
So I'm going to do that, yeah.
Oh, well, anyway, Instagram. See how shit I am at self-promotion, but if you want to see my Instagram, including a picture of Nick Knowles sitting in an Aston Martin Signet with a bit of whimsy underneath it, then
it's funny.
Sniff_petrol on Instagram, because some fucker's got sniff petrol as one word.
Oh, it's funny. Someone took car pervert, so I couldn't do that ages ago. And I keep writing to their local MP to complain about it.
I just put a stiffly worded letter in with the internet ombudsman.
Oh, there's that lovely term again.
I know.
It's one of our favourites.
Really. I just wanted to say ombudsman because it's one of my favourite words.
I'd like a rap artist to use the word ombudsman in a
what, work it into
a work it into a rhyme.
Work it into a rhyme.
Because that sometimes there's some fantastic words of being woven in a rap, and I do go, oh, that's good. They've used that and that. That's good linguistic skills there.
Yeah.
And actually, I haven't heard ombudsman. So I'd probably like that to be woven into
some rhyme. I don't
even
know what you'd
rhyme.
Rhyme it with, ombudsman. I mean, it's a hard one, isn't
well,
it?
Well, it'd be man. Would it be man?
Awkward son. I've always been your awkward son. Why don't you report me to the ombudsman? It's not quite there, is it?
But that's the skill, right? You take an awkward word like that and you can successfully weave it in.
Well, let's get Dizzy Rascal or someone involved in this.
Can we just going to stop the press a minute? We've just had a telegram from a search engine come through to say that on January 2nd, 1981, Peter Sutcliffe, a.k.a. the Yorkshire Ripper, was arrested by two Sheffield police officers on routine patrol for displaying false number plates on his Rover. The number plates actually belonged to a Skoda. Peter Sutcliffe had stolen the plates from a scrapyard in nearby Dewsbury, and he had a prostitute in his car with him at the time, who he was intending to kill, and he requested permission to go to the toilet before going to the station. And while he was being questioned at the station, one of the arresting officers decided to go and check the bushes where he'd urinated. He found a hammer and a chisel behind some shrubbery. And they also found some murder-related stuff in the boot of his Rover. So there you go. I do remember. I remember a Skoda and a Rover being critical in the conviction of the Yorkshire Ripper who died today, and that's it. That's the only reason why I mentioned it, because it's car related killer
fair play
trivia.
Do you remember?
I feel like I've exercised the demons now. Of I knew there was something. I tell you what, your Aston Martin Signet Instagram post, which was very impressive this week because it did make me chuckle multiple times, but it's not the best thing I've seen on Instagram this week.
Right,
this is the bit where you ask me what the best thing I've seen on Instagram this week is.
Johnny Smith, what's the best thing that you've seen on Instagram in the last week?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I follow a couple of bands on Instagram and an old band-related kind of, I guess, fan pages, because there's sometimes some really good archive. And in this instance, Led Zeppelin Archives is a handle I peruse here and there. Do quite like a bit of Zeppelin. And there's a newspaper cutting or a magazine clipping from The Loves and Hates of Robert Plant, and I can't work out where this was from, which magazine it was from. I think it might have been Rolling Stone or NME. And it's just got a column of the things that Robert Plant loves and a column that he hates.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to tell you all of them, but the bit that really I loved was the fact that halfway down the loves, it says, "I love reading about India, the country which I would like most to visit. I like walking through the countryside, taking my time, my favourite walk being along the banks of the River Severn. Mm-hmm. I also like cleaning the car, which most blokes hate, but I dig." And instantly I'm like, the lead singer of one of the original metal bands, hard rock bands, who's still alive and pretty cool, he enjoyed and maybe does still enjoy cleaning his cars. And I'm thinking, today, is Robert Plant still into cleaning cars? Is he like at the forefront of vehicle detailing? We all know that the world of detailing is a big business now. People getting very, very turned on about the beading.
The beading.
Of moisture off paintwork and things. Is Robert Plant, with his millions that he's made, does he just enjoy nothing more but a really good detail? I'd love it if he does. I need to meet him even more than I did before now.
Do you think he's got a two-bucket system going on?
Oh, Plant. Plant's got way more than two buckets. Plant's gone for the six-bucket system, written a very convoluted
reason. These rock and roll
why.
Stars, they're just, it's all about excess with them, isn't it?
Oh, it's total excess. That's the thing. He's gone clean in terms of the way he lives, but he's full rock and roll with car cleansing. So maybe he's got a mobile valeting business. Robert Plant's like crazy rock and roll valeting.
Do you think he still gets together with Jimmy Page, who has a very slovenly attitude to car washing, and just... Absolutely despairs at the amount of brake dust that's caked onto the front rims of Page's... What would Jimmy Page drive? I have a fairly certain knowledge that Robert Plant, however you'd have it, is an Audi A8 man in recent times, possibly even S8.
I'd like to know what Plant drives now. Like, what are him and his family's just like nails? What are his hacks? I'd like to know that very much. And maybe that's the thing. Maybe Robert Plant doesn't offer a service publicly, but to the other band members, it's well known. Plant can't help himself. If Page turns up on the doorstep for an afternoon chat or maybe a bit of a session of, I don't know, old times.
Holy shit.
What? So, are you right? Are you correct?
Well, I just typed Robert Plant car into non-tree planting search engine Google, bastards, and and did a picture search. Yes, an Audi S8 comes up. It was for sale at Bonhams, ironically at Bonhams, John Bonham's auction.
Of course, John Bonham's auctions.
But
yeah.
Scrolling down, this is weird because it's just weird synchronicity in this podcast. Google image search, there is a picture of Robert Plant standing inexplicably with, I don't know who that woman is, with a woman who's sitting on a barrier that's labelled City of Clarksdale, so it's in the US somewhere, lurking in the back of shot. I mean, literally lurking, because it's poking out from behind a tree, is a Subaru Tribeca.
No, you're joking.
I'm not.
Robert Plant, is that abandoned Tribeca next to you? Was that Plant?
Was it Plant? And he just went, it's got a stubborn bit of bird shit on it, and he's just despaired so much that he's got out.
It just had an ECU meltdown, and he just thought, do you know what, I'm late. So he just got out, clicked the button to lock it.
Threw the keys onto the railway line and
left the keys on the scuttle and just went, I'm off, and just walked off with a paper under his arm. And that was that.
It's just really weird. I mean, the car is sort of incidental. It's like it's in the back of shot, but there are no other cars in the back of shot, and it is genuinely just lurking, like you can only see its nose poking out from behind a tree. It's a very weird photo that just, of all the cars in the world to be in a photo with Robert Plant, the one,
do you know what?
The extremely obscure Subaru MPV that we were talking about last week. It is there.
Can you imagine if Robert Plant, because he is quite a charitable guy from what I can read and see, imagine if he said, I will come and I will heavily detail somebody's car if they bid high enough. You'll get a day of Robert Plant-related car cleansing. I just think that would be unbelievably good. Wouldn't it be brilliant?
You think his trademark long rock star hair would keep dipping into the soapy water, and it would be quite, he'd have to tie it back, really, wouldn't he?
But doesn't actually use his own hair as a chamois.
No,
when
I'm not
the final.
Maybe he does. Maybe that's the secret to his high shine bodywork, that he uses his own lustrous hair to
that would
buff
be amazing.
The metal.
Robert Plant's own hair chamois. I don't know. I've got newfound levels of respect because I like cleaning my own vehicle. I do. Mm. I don't get enough time to do it.
Do you want to come over and clean my Land Rover? Because it's a right fucking state at the moment. And
I would love to clean your Land Rover, because your Land Rover is one of those cars where I think I could bring it up nicely with the products that I've got about my person in my garage. And I've also had my pressure washer refurbished recently. Instead of doing the usual thing of like, it doesn't work anymore, clearly it's not going to be repairable, bollocks, I'll just order a new one. I took it to a local company that I know are a dealer of Karcher, and I said, could you just diagnose the thing? And of course they went, well, it's going to be £30 for us to just look at it. And I went, okay. And they did. And I've had a new pump fitted in it. So most people would have just chucked it away. But I'm like, no, I've had good years' service out of that. I've had 10 years out of it.
Fair play.
I get the impression you weren't interested in that last part of the chat, Rich.
No, I kind of was. a bit. I just found Robert Plant's old Audi S8, 2002 S8. It sold, looks like it sold in May of this year at...
A
Bonham's auction at Bicester Heritage, yeah. 2002 Audi S8, ex-Robert Plant, whatever. Odometer reading 1,999 miles and 800 miles also. Originally owned by Led Zeppelin's Robert Plant, this highly specified and little-seen Audi S8... God, auction descriptions are shit, aren't they?
Did you say little-seen?
What are you talking about? Little-seen. Must have been seen by all the people who watched it doing 200,000 miles up and down Britain. But blah de blah de blah. The front tyres are showing some signs of wear because he's on it. It's a nose-heavy car.
Who actually cares when you're buying Robert Plant's S8? You go, tyres are consumables. I don't care. I want to know if it's been in a hedge, and I want to know if anyone's stubbed out cigars on the back seat.
While stored for 2 years and consequently due a service in MOT, the engine is said to start and run while stored for 2 years. With three subsequent owners after Robert Plant, whose signature appears on the PDI sheet, this S8 with first-class rock and roll credentials is certainly worth closer inspection. Well, it sold for
How much did you sell for, Rich?
£2,812, including buyer's premium.
You're joking.
Yeah, sort of what an S8 would go for, isn't it? I don't feel that.
Did you just say basically £3,000?
Yeah.
I mean, they're an expensive beast to recommission. I know they would be.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
But it's Robert Plant's actual Audi S8. I bet it was clean.
Looks quite nice.
I bet it was.
Yeah, looks good in the pictures.
I bet it was cleaned. Yeah.
If
anyone knows anybody associated with Led Zeppelin listening to this, I just want details of their latter year vehicles, not the rock and roll era, the more sedate middle aged guys.
Yeah.
I just want to go to the shops. I just want to go and hang out with some friends. I need to drive to the airport, etc.
There's a few scenarios. Pictures of. Looks like he had an Aston. Looks like he had a DB5. And there's that picture of him with a Range Rover, the original Range Rover in the 70s that I put on my Instagram.
Yeah,
definitely
friend,
an Aston.
My friend Kieran at Rockstars Cars, well worth following on Twitter, by the way, he owns the Led Zeppelin Manager's two-door Range, which was spec'd by John Bonham.
Yeah. Oh, really? Was it?
Yes, really, really cool.
Huh.
It's a 70s one. I know they had a number of them because John Bonham had a Range Rover as well, but apparently Bonham spec'd this one because John Bonham apparently liked specking cars, which again, I think is fantastic because I could just imagine he just had a very large tumbler of scotch and he'd be like, just give me the brochure. And he'd just flick through it with a pen on his ear, just going, right, yeah, you might as well have that. Put that on there. No, you don't want that. Take
what?
It.
A winch? Why would I have a winch? Just do it. Well, I live in London. Don't care.
That could be a thing, couldn't it? Celebrities spec cars for people without even so much as asking what kind of a person they are, what lifestyle they have, what they really want. And then people go, well, it's great because I had this car spec'd by Justin Bieber. Go, but does Bieber know you? No.
No.
And does Bieber know that you need children's seats and stuff?
Yeah.
No,
he's a total prick. He put in the heated rear seats, but I don't need those. Why did he do that? It cost me £450. What an absolute
wanker. And the money, maybe that's what celebrities could do for charity. Like I said, with
ruinously
Robert Plant's cleaning
specified
center.
Cars.
Yeah, just go, just say, well, you've won the chance to have your car spec'd by, I don't know, insert name of person here. And they just go, yeah, I'll do that. By the way, you didn't ask me whether I liked yellow or not, but you appear to have ordered it in custom mustard yellow. I actually despise yellow, and I've got to keep this car now for a number of years.
Listen,
guys, come on, guys.
For the amusement of Dan Prosser from another podcast, I'm going to say we should wrap things up, knowing full well that I've got something else I wanted to introduce, but we should sort of start looking for the exit ramp. But in the meantime, I wanted to just bring up that BMW iX that they revealed last week, just because lots of people seem to be talking about it, and a few people talked in our direction about it and went, when are you guys going to mention it on the podcast? Well, now, because... if people haven't seen it, well, consider yourself lucky. It's like you haven't seen pictures from those napalm attacks in Vietnam or something. It's like,
I think it's peak self-medication design. BMW have been working towards some appalling visuals that we've seen, beaver-mouthed coupes, etc. Mm. But this is... I mean, I can't find an angle that's good.
Because
I've been looking.
There simply isn't one. I mean, I think the thing is, like the 4 Series with that funny beaver nose, people are slightly distracted by that, and it's almost like that is deliberately leaving a dog shit nearby to attract all the flies. That funny new grill is almost like to distract people from the actual horror show. The grill is not the worst part of the 4 Series, and it is definitely not the worst part of the iX. It is the single shittiest, most sloppy, poorly resolved, badly surfaced, badly detailed piece of car design I have seen in possibly ever. It's horrific, and they should be ashamed of themselves. A Chinese startup run by meth addicts would do better at designing a car. It is absolutely appalling in every way. And I cannot believe that BMW, who I was just doing some reading up in an old car magazine this week for something else I'm writing, and I happened upon a test of the BMW 5 Series E34 shape, the late 80s into 90s one. And I looked at it, and of course they look dated now, but they look of their time, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the way that car, the proportions
tasteful.
Of that car, fundamentally the proportions, which is the first bit of car design you have to get right, Yeah. They are so good. And then the detailing is so neat and thoughtful and consistent and logical. It's a lovely piece of design to this day, and it's over 30 years old. And what the merry fuck has happened to BMW design? Because it is terrible these days.
My hope is that if this stuff is being aimed at the Chinese market, I need collectively, if anybody from the Chinese market is listening, to turn around and just point at BMW and go, too much. Guys, it's too much.
Well, I think the best thing that people in China could do is just, you know, vote with their wallets and not buy the fucking thing. But it's,
what's amazing is the company that can bring out, and I mentioned this on social media yesterday, the company that can do the i8 and the i3, let's just focus on the iCars because the iCars are a bit bolder, a bit more unique.
Mm.
The i3 is a fascinating car. It's not to everybody's taste, but it's different. And I know they wanted to be different and they've pioneered it. And the i3 could come out tomorrow and it would still look like the car of tomorrow.
That's the thing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not against a progressive, challenging design, and I think the i3 is that, and the i8 was that to some extent. And when the i3 came out, you know, you sort of looked at it and went, God, there's a lot to take in here. But what's really telling about the i3, I think, is that it hasn't dated at all. It could come out now and still look interesting and fresh. And you wouldn't call it a pretty car, but it is. It's the fundamentals. Everything about it, it feels like it was done by professionals. They've worked it out, and it's like it. Everything lines up where it should line up, and everything that's a shape or a surface sort of is then consistent through it. And that's what's wrong with the iX. They didn't seem to know what they were doing. And you look at the sill. It's got a grade-in sill, which looks a bit heavy-handed in itself. But then the top line of that is one angle. And then there's a blue stripe that sort of splits the difference between the horizontal lower sill and the angle of the upper trim bit. And it's just like, what the frig were you doing there? Why? And then the corners of the headlights where the indicators are curved, but then there's a trim strip that's blue in the front bumper that's got a sort of harder edge on it. Stuff doesn't match.
No.
Where on the i3, it does all match because it's been properly done. And it is a good bit of design, and it's holding up well. And it's sort of, the more, you know, every time I see an i3, I look at it. Because there's more to take in.
Yeah, there is. It's like a bit of abstract art that you're not sure whether you adore it, but you're definitely attracted to it and fascinated with it. And I think there's a lot of cars out there which do that. You like them, but you don't necessarily hold your hand up and go, they're pretty. No, they're not pretty, but they're really interesting and they're good, and it's a good piece of engineering. The thing about the iX is, all the engineering beneath the surface is sort of lost at the moment because someone out there said it could run on water and have been sold for £8,000 with a 20-year warranty. But people would still go, but
I'll get the bus, mate.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the real problem. I'm sure the drivetrain and the engineering behind that car are fantastic. It needs instantly reshelling. Instantly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame,
it's
isn't
such
it?
A shame.
The interior, weirdly, is actually, I think, quite good. Apart from the odd-shaped steering wheel, it's got a bit of a 70s vibe, but in a good way. But it's at least it's
I've heard
of
the steering wheels.
Neat.
I've not actually seen the steering wheel. I couldn't bear myself to look at interior pictures.
Well, it's not round, and that's always an issue, isn't it, in cars, I would say.
Yeah. Although, Allegro vibes, you know, it's just another one where the Allegro can go, by the way, guys, I'm not the worst car ever made. There's worse.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? With every year that passes, you sort of go, actually, the Allegro wasn't all bad.
It's not. The Marina wasn't, actually.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. The Marina was a very professional piece of car design. It wasn't an ugly car. It looked absolutely contemporary, and it's sort of very similar in shape and proportion to an Avenger or a Mark III Cortina, because that's the style of the time. I think the Marina was bang on trend. It was the engineering that was dog shit.
And, yeah, that's true.
Whereas the Allegro was sort of a bit the other way around. But, but neither of them was as awful as the iX is to look at. I mean, I don't know. I am
Chris Bangle is sat.
Oh, he's pissing himself.
He's on one of those designer easy chairs next to one of those fires. It's not a real fire, it's a screensaver. And he's doing finger pistols to the camera and winking.
I think he's got a martini glass.
He's got a martini and he's got some fantastic, you know, fairly suave jazz very quietly played on,
yes,
on an exquisite B&O system in the background. And you're like, and he's just
very
doing finger
minimalist
pistols.
Room with a gorgeous view.
Just to remind people, and yeah, just to remind people that it's like, you know, you thought I was radical. At least I was radical with a bit of taste. Guys, you ain't seen nothing yet. Finger pistols, finger pistols. I just think it's... who is... Because BMW obviously own Mini, and like, I was looking at the five-door Mini that I drove a very cool EV the other day that's coming out that I'm doing a video on, and of a big manufacturer. And I kept looking at Minis because that's its arch rival. The five-door Mini. I mean, it's so lazy and awful. It doesn't work. The five-door Mini one shouldn't exist.
The back door's too short. That's, I think, part of the problem with it.
Back door's too short, and it goes right into the arch and cuts out the arch, but it still doesn't work. And then... You know, the mini, which is the one with the double back doors. It's not the Countryman, is it? It's the Clubman.
The Clubman,
isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the Clubman. Hmm. That has such a long bonnet and such a short bum. For the side profile, you just go, doesn't work.
Oh, it just looks like someone made a normal Mini out of plasticine and then squished it a bit, doesn't it? It's just it's weird.
And it's such a shame where you've got such a sacred brand and you're wading into the design studio with an Excalibur sword and just kicking down shelves of Ming vases and just shouting. I mean, it's awful.
It's awful.
It's so awful.
It's all awful. Anyway, but their interior people seem to be much more on it, which is odd. So I don't know, maybe just sack all the exterior people and let the interior team do everything. Because
get the interior team to design the exterior. What's the worst that can happen, Dr. Pepper?
I just looked again at my list of things we're going to talk about. It says BMW iX. Unexpected bald men. And then again, I still don't know why this is on there, but I'm going to leave it on until I work it out. I've just written fizzy yogurt, so maybe week I'll have worked that one out. But in the meantime, thank you ever so much for listening. If you want to write in, Smith and Sniff, all in writing, at gmail.com, or you can reach us through Twitter at CarPervert and at SniffPetrol, or Instagram. There are messages on Instagram, aren't there? I only discovered that. I always forget and then find that 70 people have tried to contact me through there, including you.
I can't keep up with it.
Yeah, all right, don't contact us through Instagram,
the DM
please.
Overload on Instagram's too much.
Yeah,
don't
contact us through Instagram. and that's about it, except I have three things to tell you. One is that Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called The Late Break Show, which has many excellent treats upon it in video form. Two, I have a book out called The Medium-Sized Book of Boring Car Trivia by Sniff Petrol, sequel coming soon. I know I keep saying that. It will happen. God damn it, it will. And three, I started doing three... things at the end of this show which involved me researching a piece of trivia, and unfortunately I can't think of anything this week and I didn't bother to look anything up, so the third fact is that I am deeply unprofessional. Didn't you have one that you said you were going to do this week? Hang on a minute.
Yeah, I did, and I've just suddenly tried to remember what it is. It wasn't about the song Sisters Doing It for Themselves with Aretha Franklin and Eurythmics woman, who I forgot the name, Annie Lennox. And the fact there's just too much use of closed hi-hat, that the drummer goes crazy with it, and I can't unhear it now. So it sort of ruined that song for me. But that's not car-related. So
well, it's a reasonably good fact. There we go. Three, the song Sisters Are Doing It to Themselves by Aretha Franklin and Annie Lennox has too much closed hi-hats on the rhythm track. Far too much.
It's just such a stupid thing to say, and I've said it out loud on a recording.
Oh well. Alright, thanks for listening. We'll see you same time next week.
Thank you for listening.
Goodbye.
Sisters are doing it for themselves. There was a time when I did stuff.